Oh my goodness. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Olivia's Obscura. It is me, your host, Olivia, and I'm trying something a little bit different tonight. I was like, oh, I want to do the podcast. This stemmed from me, unfortunately, having too many hobbies and passions, which is not something that I'm going to really complain about, but I will say that that was the impetus for this discovery, is that I was like, okay, I want to carve my new lino block tonight, but I also want to record the podcast tonight. And so that I was like, okay, I'm just going to start with the carving and then carve for like an hour and then maybe transition into podcasting. And get this, because I'm annoying, quite frankly, I was talking to myself because before I hop on the microphone, like usually I just like to riff a little bit and kind of just like get things going. And tonight I was like talking out loud to myself as a totally normal, insane person does, duh. And I was like, wait a minute, like you're actually kind of onto something here, queen. I think you should just get on the freaking mic and get to vamping, little vamping. No one opens the door for a native New Yorker. Little vamping. Isn't that what she says? I don't know. That video of, I think that's Wendy Williams on The Masked Singer, I believe. Iconic. But anyway, I was carving and I was talking out loud to myself and I was like, okay, so like, you're actually kind of killing it, diva. Like, diva up. Like, you should pull out the microphone. So I did just that. And I was like, you know what? I was kind of like getting into a bit of a vibe with the carving and the talking. And so I was like, what if I just carve while I talk? And so that's what we're doing. And for some reason, I've never thought to multitask. Like, whenever I get on here, I usually am like staring at the GarageBand track as I record. And like, sometimes I get like so swept away in watching it. I go on so many tangents and sometimes I just like sit in silence and stare at the GarageBand track and I'm like, weird, like, actually, maybe that's not good, you know, like maybe it's not good for me to just have my mind on, I guess, maybe it's not good for me to not be doing anything with my hands. And so I'm trying to do something with my hands. And the thing about carving a block is that it's very mindless. If you don't know this, because I'm now realizing I don't really post about this on TikTok these days. And also, I don't know if everyone who listens to this podcast follows me on Instagram, like my regular Instagram, not the podcast Instagram, but like I'm carving a block. I do block prints. And so that's kind of, if you're like, what the actual hell are you talking about? Like, it's this like linoleum block that I'm carving a design into and I'm going to use it to print t-shirts. But I did the design, I like traced because I drew up the design in Procreate and it's a Chapel Rowan design. It's a Chinese takeout box that says hot to go on the side and or on the top and bottom it says hurry up, it's getting cold. And I'm like obsessed with it. I don't know why. I think I made this design because like I wanted to wear this as a t-shirt and I will just be offering it to the world, but for selfish reasons because it was just really something that I wanted to make. But it seems to be really resonating with people. I got a bunch of Instagram messages about it when I post the design, like just a little sneak peek. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, we're going to have such a fun time. Like all the girls are going to be wearing their hot to go shirts for summer. Like we're having a moment and I love this. But yeah, so what was I saying? Oh, I think this is going to be a good activity for me to do while I talk because I think this is going to be a good activity for me to do while I'm recording because it's so mindless. Like I don't have to think about what's going on because I already drew the design. I already traced it from Procreate. I already transferred it onto the linoleum. And like literally all I do now is trace the lines. And like, it's really easy and it's like really meditative and I'm really in the freaking zone right now. And I was like, yeah, sounds awesome. But I hope everyone's having a good week, you know? I'm once again recording on a Friday night, which I'm loving. Like, I love this new, I guess, is it a tradition if it's only happened twice? Because last week and this week, I've been recording on Friday night, and I really love it because then by the time it comes out on Monday, I'm like, oh, like, let me listen to, like, a little bit. And I'll, like, you know, scrub through and, like, listen to little parts here and there, and I'm like, oh, huh. that is interesting. Like, because it's been a few days and I've like already forgotten what's been going on since I've recorded. So I feel like when I, like, it was exhausting a little bit to be hearing my voice so much, like, the couple times that I've done, I don't know, this is actually a tangent and I like don't need to keep talking, but yeah, I hope everyone's been having a good week. I have, actually. I've been having a great week. Thanks for asking. I'm like kind of really living it up right now in a way that like my life is so like comfortable and chill right now. And like, it's so nice to have a job that pays me a check. Like, I feel like I didn't have like a job. I wasn't an employee of anybody. Like, I was an employee of myself, but that wasn't making me enough money. And it was also, my taxes fucking destroyed me this year. So that's not the point of this. Basically, it's really nice. That's like such a tangent. Actually, it's kind of tea. Like, maybe people are like, no, like, please air out your finances. Like, I'm dying to know, because I'm nosy like that. You know, like, I am so nosy. I love people's finances. I'm obsessed with watching girls on TikTok, like, talk about how much credit card debt they have and like how much money they make and where they live. Like, it's so fascinating to me. And yeah, but anyway, oh my God, I'm tangenting. But yeah, my life is really comfortable right now. Like, I get paid every 2 weeks, like, which is iconic. I have like a few, I have like a some diversified income streams right now. Like, I also teach these printmaking workshops to sixth graders like a couple times a month, which is pretty fun and pays me pretty well for the amount of hours it is, and which is like two. It's like 2 hours a week some weeks, so it's really not a big time commitment. When I started teaching, I actually don't know if I've talked about this on here before, but it's a nonprofit that I kind of work with in San Diego, and I've done workshops with them before for like adults at the library for printmaking. But basically, this is like an unintentional, like, let me just talk about myself and my printmaking episode, but I'll keep it snappy, I promise, because I got other actual stuff to get to. But they asked me in the fall last year, and they were like, hey, like, we're looking for someone to do this program, like, where you would teach sixth graders from one of the school districts. Do you want to do it? And I was like, oh my God, like, I like wanted to do it, because I like didn't want to say no, because I like, I don't know, like, I did want to do it, but I was like so nervous. I was like, I don't like kids. Like, I famously don't like kids, don't get along with kids, don't work well with kids. Like, I don't like them. I don't really kind of, I guess more importantly, like, I just don't really get what's going on. Like, I kind of don't understand how to interact with children. And I kind of have never had to. And I think that's where the problem is that like my sister's only 3 years younger than me. Like, and she's kind of like the youngest, I guess the youngest like kid that I interacted with on a regular basis in my life growing up was my cousin Abby, my little cousin. She's probably listening. Hey, Abby. Can we get some F's in the chat for Abby? But I think she's like only, maybe she's like 5 years younger than me. I actually don't know. Like either 5 or 6. I don't think she's 21 yet. I don't know. But that's like not that much younger. You know what I mean? Like, I was never really interacting with like little kids. Like, I knew had kids in my classes and like kids my age whose parents, like when I was like 10, 11, 12, like whose parents had a baby. And so then they had the sibling that was like 12 years younger than them. And like, I just like never had to interact with a baby really. So or like any kind of kid that was drastically younger than me, like I wasn't really interacting with toddlers, etc. You know, you kind of know what I mean. And I have never, like, a fun fact about me is that I've never babysat. Like, I never had any interest in babysitting. Like, I don't know, like, anytime that I've been working in a capacity with kids, like, they've always been, like, 15, you know, like, I guess, or, I don't know, like, I've just never, I, as an adult, have never worked with kids, really. Well, I guess that's not true. Kids would come to my volunteer shifts when I was volunteer coordinator at the food bank, but it wasn't like I was working with kids, you know, because, like, they would have parents there or like chaperones. Like, it was a field trip where, like, you know, they had like one parent for every like 4 to 5 kids. And so like, I wasn't really in like charge of them. Like I basically just like delegated what to do to the parents, and the parents like took it from there because it was, you know, like scooping peas into a bag and then tying it up. Like it wasn't rocket science, but I was really nervous about the prospect of using sharp tools and teaching a multi-step, like semi-complicated process to sixth graders. I like have no frame of reference for what a sixth grader is like, except for the fact that I see on TikTok teachers saying that they don't know how to read. Like, I've just seen so many teachers getting on TikTok, like clearly at their wits' end, like clearly like crying, has just been crying, about to cry, like sitting at their teacher desk talking specifically about how bad like their sixth, like seventh, eighth graders are at, like they're so disrespectful and they like break everything and they don't know how to read and they don't know anything and all they know is like eat hot chip and lie. And I was like, oh my God, like I actually don't know if I can handle sixth graders. But for some reason, I guess I was feeling really brave. So I said yes. And I think what it's the same, it's I'm never gonna teach the same class twice. So in the series of like 10 workshops or whatever, like it's 10 separate classes. So like if one, I was thinking like, okay, if one is really bad, like if it's really scary, like I never have to see them again and like it's fine. And this is besides the point, but like actually all of my classes so far have been pretty good. Like they've been like chaotic in different ways, but like none of them have permanently scarred me. So that's excellent. Like in fact, my expectations, because they were so low, have been exceeded majorly. So I'm kind of rocking with sixth graders now, you know what I mean? Like I kind of, we're kind of chill like that. But yeah, like the teachers in the room too, which is great. Like it's like a field trip. They come to this like little satellite campus and you know, I'm there with like my supplies and like I give them all the supplies and I give them like a little presentation about block printing and the history of block printing, blah, 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 blah. And I keep it short. I try to keep it fun. Like, I don't know. Like, I think I don't want to toot my own horn, but like, I feel like I'm a semi-engaging public speaker. Like, I don't, that's like, you know, like I can talk to a group of people for 15 to 20 minutes. Like, it's not a problem. Like, we're going to be fine. And I feel like people usually are semi engaged, you know, like, or even if they're not, like I'm still having an okay time. Like it's like I cannot relate to being afraid of public speaking. I fear it is something that I like to do a little bit too much, so that's okay for me, that aspect of it. I have to give them then the instructions on how to do the block print, and it's a lot of process, it's a lot of steps. It's like you have to draw your design on tracing paper. And then, oh, this is just how I do it. Okay, this isn't like the capital W way, but like it's my way. And this is the way I teach them to do it, is that you draw your design onto tracing paper, you flip the tracing paper onto your block, you use like a bone scraper or a pencil or something to scrape it onto the block. You lift up your tracing paper so you're left with the like mirror image of the design. And then I tell them to go over it with a Sharpie, to like make the lines bolder and to make your lines cleaner. And then I teach them how to carve it. And then after that, that's still not the end. Then they have to ink their block. And, you know, the ink is a whole thing. And I'm actually like rethinking how I do the ink, because right now I let them be in charge of their own ink. And I'm like, that is the messiest part and like the most chaotic part. And I think that maybe I should just be in charge of the ink. I'm just kind of spitballing here. I know you guys have kind of no frame of reference for what the hell I'm kind of talking about here, but like trust that this is important oral processing for me, okay? And thank you for being on this journey. But I think that maybe I need to like roll out their ink for them and like not leave them in charge of rolling out their ink, because I mean, the thing about a kid is that they're always going to use too much, right? It's never going to be, they're never like, oh, I'm going to be conservative with the amount of ink that I squeeze onto my palette. No, it's like, it's going to be way too much ink. It's going to be way too much ink on the roller. Like, it's just going to be, it's just kind of not the vibe. So I think that I'm going to change up my ink system this next week when I go. Riveting content over here at Olivia's Obscura, isn't it? I do say so myself. I actually don't even know how we got onto this topic, but who gives a fuck? Like, we're just kind of cooking. Me and Shannon went to go see a movie tonight. I invited her to go see a movie because I'm like a big Exploration Live head. Like, I love the podcast Exploration Live. If you don't listen to it, I feel like if you like this podcast, you would probably like that podcast. Like, it's just kind of like two people kind of like goofing and gaffing and like sharing ideas and whatever. And it's like a comedy podcast, but They had John Early on this past week, and he was talking about his new movie called Stress Positions that Theda Hamill did. And the way he was talking about it and the way that Charlie and Natalie were talking about it on the podcast, I was like, oh my God, like, that sounds really funny. I would like to see that. And I thought that John Early was very funny in the episode. That was a good episode. Like, I really enjoyed their most recent episode. So, but there was one theater in Hillcrest playing Stress Positions. It opened tonight and I wanted to go see it. So I was like, oh my God, girl, like, and I wanted to go see it. So we did. I kind of like didn't know what to expect. I knew it was a comedy. I knew it was like a COVID comedy specifically, which the reason I wanted to see it is because I'm like kind of averse to like pandemic related media. Like, I just kind of feel like it's too soon and like people are like, I'm not like into it. Like, I don't really want to look back on that time right now. Like, it just wasn't like, it just isn't like long enough ago to be nostalgic or like, I don't know. Like, it's just not, I was like not in a good place and no one was in a good place. Like, it's just not kind of my vibe to go back and relive like quarantine days. But this was like a quarantine comedy. I guess it was, it wasn't, the comedy itself wasn't centered around the fact that it was quarantine. The fact that they were quarantining in the early days of the COVID lockdown in New York City was just kind of the backdrop for the story. And Charlie and Natalie on Exploration Live were like, yeah, like, I feel like we don't really like movies and TV shows about the pandemic, but something about this one like was just really funny and I thought you did it really well. And I was like, oh, interesting. Like, I'd be interested to see that because I kind of also feel that way about pandemic media. And it was a funny movie. I don't know. Like, I have, it was like an, oops, sorry. I'm like being really loud. My bad. But what was I even fucking saying? It was funny. I enjoyed it. It was like an hour and 30 minutes, like the perfect movie length. Like, I thought it was, yeah, I thought it was clever. I thought it was funny. I thought the dialogue was funny. Like, I don't really have any strong feelings about it, but it was like a good little ditty that I rather enjoyed. So, you know, nothing too serious. It like wasn't that deep. I just kind of like thought it was an enjoyable watch, you know? Like, even when we get to the point of Superstore, because me and Ty just love Superstore, like, that's kind of, we go to back to that show consistently. Like, we rotate through, like, New Girl, Broad City, Superstore, like, there's a couple more that I can't really think of. Those have been, like, our more recent ones, I guess. And I love Superstore. I think it's so funny. I think it's a very underrated show. I do not hear enough people talking about Superstore. Like, I think it's just as funny, if not funnier. Or at least I like it more than The Office. Like, Superstore is my office, you know, it's whatever. But I watch the COVID season, like, when they get to that part in the show, but I don't, like, love it. Like, I'm kind of just kind of, I'm like, ooh, like, why are we doing this? Like, why can't we just, like, lie and pretend that it didn't happen? Like, why does this show have to reflect reality? Like, couldn't we just like kind of do this in it? But I will say, they don't, the way they do COVID in Superstore, like, is, I feel like, pretty realistic for someone who worked in, like, you know, as not realistic obviously, but as far as like a dramatization, a TV show like sitcom goes, like, I would say it was pretty realistic. And they had some like funny commentary on like work COVID and working in like a customer facing position during COVID. But yeah, but I am generally just like not a fan right now at this point in time of like COVID commentary. But I thought that Stress Positions was funny. Okay, maybe worth streaming or whatever when it comes out. But yeah, the other me, Ty, and Montana last night finally watched The Iron Claw, which I've been meaning to watch like literally since it was in theaters. Like, the whole time it was in theaters, before it even went to theaters, I was like, you guys, like, we gotta go see Iron Claw. Like, I gotta go see Iron Claw. Like, I'm not missing this one. Because I don't know, like, I feel like it was just like very hyped up and like, you know, like Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, like wrestling, like it was just like a moment kind of. And there was that like one, was that like a Rolling Stones photo shoot? Hold please. It was the Entertainment Weekly photo shoot from last year, from November. You know the one. This photo shoot altered lives, minds. I will obviously post some of these on the grid. Follow the podcast on Instagram @ ObscuraPod. But it was just this like iconic, like really hot, fun, sexy, cool photo shoot of the Iron Claw guys. And I don't know, like I thought the way it was marketed was really fun. And I was like, okay, I can't wait to go see this movie. And then I never did. And I kept meaning to, and I never did. And then it came out on streaming and I just didn't, never watched it. And finally, I think Montana was like, guys, like we actually do just like need to watch the Iron Claw. And we were like, so true. Like, let's do it. Let's do it. This movie was really depressing. It was long. It was like two hour, 15 minute, like sad movie, like a real Brokeback Mountain of sorts. Like it just kind of, it was sad. And like, I listen, every 3 to 4 years, I love to watch Brokeback Mountain and feel terrible for 24 to 48 hours afterwards. So I'm not saying that this is like a bad thing, but The Iron Claw, sad movie, okay? Not a very uplifting story. So here's kind of my overall thoughts, because obviously me and Ty and Montana debriefed afterwards, and I feel like we had some good thoughts. And the kind of consensus that we came to was like, we weren't familiar with the Von Erich lore. Like, I actually like had no idea that they existed until they did this movie, which is probably why they did this movie. Like, they're trying to introduce more people to this like interesting story, dare I say. Well, yeah, duh, that's not a hot take. That's why they made the movie. But I didn't know diddly squat about the Von Erich brothers, any of the curse. Like, I didn't know any of that. And I do feel like this movie lacked a bit of context, because Montana did the good Lord's work of going on Wikipedia and doing like a quick, you know, Von Erich 101 and kind of like relaying the information to us. But there was parts of it that I feel could have done with more context, and that would have made me understand more and care more. Because the other thing we all kind of agreed on was like, it was a really well done movie. Like, it was really well shot and it was very compelling. And like, in the way that A24 movies are, like, it was like fun to watch. It was good to watch. But we were kind of like, we don't really care about these characters as much as I feel like we should. And it's because like, we just didn't know enough, I think. But the other thing is that apparently they just cut one brother's story out of the movie completely. Like, they just omitted one of the brothers from the story. Like, he just didn't exist in the Iron Claw universe, and they like kind of looped his story into Carrie's story. Jeremy Allen White's character, Carrie, okay, spoilers for the Iron Claw. If you haven't seen it, like, sorry to say, I'm gonna spoil it. You should skip ahead. Good luck. It's also, I actually don't really feel that bad about spoiling it, because it is a true story. You know what I mean? Like, can you really spoil history? I don't know, but be warned if this is really something you are invested in, not having spoiled. But the saddest story of them all to me was the brother, Mikey, I believe, who like was wrestling too hard, like his ass got beat too fucking hard because his dad kept pushing him. Like, what a miserable father. Okay. Jail, prison, even perhaps, like, pushed his son too hard. He got his ass got beat in the boxing ring or whatever. WWE, I think they were doing, which, like, when are we going to talk about the fact that like WWE wrestling is just drag for manly men? Like, it's actually just like wrestling drag. Like, this movie takes place in Texas, or like kind of all, they travel a lot, but the family was based in Texas. And like, there seemed to be some like really deep, like WWE Texas culture there that like, I don't think I really understand the scope of, but seemed to be very tied to the location. And also a lot of the like emotional repression and like stuff that was very much a big part of the dynamic in the movie, like, is a product of growing up in like a conservative Southern household. So yeah, I would argue that the fact that it's Texas has a lot to do with it. But I do believe that Texas, like, at some point has tried to ban like drag in the state of Texas. And WWE actually is, when you think about it, it is a drag show. I won't be taking questions. So explain that, conservatives. Okay, explain that one, Fox News. What the hell was I talking about? Mikey. Mikey got some infection. I don't even remember the specifics because it was kind of like, there was a lot that happened in the movie. Like, it covered like many, many years, like 20 years maybe. So there's just like a lot to keep track of. And also Zac Efron, like they all looked the same age the whole time. Like, even though at the beginning of the movie, Zac Efron was supposed to be like, or Zac Efron's character, Kevin, was supposed to be like 25 or 26. And then at the end, he was supposed to be, I think, over 40. And they just like never aged him up or down. Like, he just looked the same the whole time. And there weren't any like title cards that like the other thing that we all said was that we really would have enjoyed them like flashing the year up on the screen. Like, because it was really hard to keep track of the passage of time because like the actors all just kind of looked the same the whole way through. But basically, the worst death, in my opinion, because it's a curse, right? Like, oh, the Von Erichs are cursed. Like, they're all dying. Like, all of the brothers are dying. And Mikey's, they're all like terrible, tragic deaths. But in my humble, Mikey's was the worst because he basically got his brain freaking scrambled up like an egg in his brain. He had an infection that caused an infection, question mark? Yeah, something happened where, and I don't know if this is even like real, but this is what happened in the movie. Okay, I actually don't even care to fact check. I really don't. But he had a 107 degree fever for 2 hours and like basically like got his brain cooked. And that was crazy. Like, I don't know why I didn't realize that could happen. Like, first of all, I didn't really even know you could get 107 degree fever. Like, that seems really intense. Like, I don't know how you wouldn't die, but like, yeah, like he was not good after that happened. And it made me so upset because at one point, like, or the most upsetting part of the movie to me for some reason was the scene where Kevin, Zac Efron, and Mikey post brain scramble were doing like a press conference. I think they were doing the press conference in the hospital lobby after he, like when he was in the hospital. And they like put him on the desk, like with a mic in front of him, like asking him questions. And he was just like clearly so like neurologically impaired. It was like disturbing to watch. And like, if that actually happened in real life, which it probably did because this movie was based on a real story, like definitely sickening. Mikey, in my opinion, had the worst go of it because that didn't even kill him. He actually killed himself by taking a lot of Tylenol, I believe. I believe it was Tylenol or some kind of over-the-counter medication. But yeah, it was crazy. It was also sad. Like, I think one of the most, like, devastating lines was after, I don't know who, like, maybe the fourth or fifth brother died in the movie. I can't remember if it was Mikey or if it was Carrie, but their mom is getting ready to go to the funeral and Kevin's wife comes in and she's like, come on, like, we gotta go. And the mom just kind of like starts breaking down and she's like, I need a dress. And the daughter-in-law is like, well, just wear the dress you have. Like, it's a great dress. And the mom is crying and she goes, everyone's gonna recognize it, which is like so sad. Like, enough. And this is like a family in the public eye, right? So like, that was really gut-wrenching detail of like, she's had to bury so many of her sons that she's worried that at this point people watching her on the news or watching her in town are gonna like recognize the dress. Like, I thought that was like a very gut-wrenching detail that did stick out to me that I remember. But yeah, overall good movie. I will say that we need to get like a Harvard research grant given to someone to study scientifically why Jeremy Allen White is so goddamn hot and sexy. Okay, it's like a clinical disorder. It is crazy to me. Like, I am not usually like, I like don't usually just like have the hots for people like that. But like, I genuinely do want to do unspeakable things with Jeremy Allen White. And I think that like most people would agree with me. It's like actually something like very fundamental and primal that he brings out in people across the gender spectrum, dare I say, because I know men who also feel this way about Jeremy Allen White. Ty is one of them. If you don't believe me, I can get him on the mic and he can tell you this from his mouth too. But he does ignite something inside of me that is like, I need him biblically, you know? Like, no other like celebrity kind of like hall pass like is really at the same tier as Jeremy Allen White for me personally. And in the movie, like in the Iron Claw, the first scene that he, it's not the first scene that he's in, but it's like one of the earlier scenes that he's in, he stands up and he's wearing these like short shorts and this cut off like muscle tee. And I audibly gasped. I was sitting on the couch. I went, like, that is the Jeremy Allen White effect. It's crazy. Montana and I also earlier in the week watched Argylle, which is a movie that we had a vested interest in, like ever since it came out and hit theaters, like, and all of the reviews were getting written about how it's like the worst movie of the year and like the worst spy movie ever. We were like, we have to see this, obviously. Like, that's right up our alley based on the description. And it finally hit Apple TV, I think. And so we watched it the other night and oh my God, like such a bad movie, but I will say that I did enjoy it rather a lot. Like really, I did. It was like, I was kind of hoping that it would be campy and like unserious. And it was like, it was campy and unserious. And if you don't get it, like, I kind of just can't explain it to you. Like it was way too long. Like it was 2 hours and 20 minutes. Like they could have cut 40 of those minutes off and it would have been totally fine because the plot like wasn't super compelling, but it was just like, it was absurd enough to keep me engaged. And I will say that I personally think the high point of the movie was the random dance numbers kind of towards the middle end of the movie just kind of came out of nowhere. I really loved them, like, because they were so goofy. Like, it was giving such, like, Bollywood, like, campy vibes, and I just liked it. Yeah, I don't know. If you have, like, 2 hours and 20 minutes to kill and you like kind of, like, a cringy spy movie, like, I would say maybe you'd like it. It's chilly. Like, and also, God, what's her name? Bryce Dallas Howard, who is the lead in this movie, I found her to be rather likable. I really enjoyed her in the movie. I thought she was really pretty. Like, I don't know why. Like, I've never actually maybe seen a movie with her in it, but I was like, wow, like, Bryce Dallas Howard, you slay, queen. Like, you're wearing the fuck out of those jeans. Go off. Okay, shifting topics. This is kind of random, but I was watching this TikTok last night that it's this guy who goes, I don't even know. I'd never seen his videos before, but I did follow him. I can't remember what his name is, but I'll find it. But he talks about like pop songs from the past and kind of like, you know, what he liked about them and like what they sounded like and the history behind the song and like how, you know, like he just kind of does his breakdown of like pop songs in like the late 2000s, early 2010s kind of time frame. And one popped up on my For You page about Some Nights by Fun. And I was like, oh God, like I used to love this song. Like Some Nights by Fun was so good. Like when I first heard it, when I was like, I don't know, 13 years old, probably younger, maybe 12. Not that it really matters, but I do feel like 12 versus 13 is kind of crucial. Like those are years where every age is crucial, which a song like that has gotten like so much radio play. And it's just like so done and tired that I don't really appreciate that song when I hear it anymore, but the way he described it and was talking about it, like, made me hear it through fresh ears for the first time. It was, like, the first time I was listening to the song, and it was a really fun experience. I was like, oh my God, like, yes, like, this was a great song. I did love this song. And then he made a follow-up video about the song Just Give Me a Reason, I think it's called, with Pink and Nate Roos. And Nate Roos is the lead singer of Fun. And I think he was also in this band called The Format. I think they have a couple bangers. I think there's a song, All the Pretty Girls, The Format, maybe? No, that is a Fun song. Fuck, that's an early Fun song. What did The Format do? I know that I used to have a song that I listened to all the time from The Format. Okay, I found the song. It's called She Doesn't Get It, and I'm gonna play a little bit of it for you because it is a freaking good little ditty. Well, I'm bored 'cause I feel my shoulder look at me as if I got a reason to stand. But you talk so loud that it calms me down. You're crying, let's make your toast. She says she's leaving on a Sunday, or at least Yeah, like definitely just slays. Love those bells. Like, what a fun song. I definitely am adding that to my playlist right now because I specifically had this song burned onto a mix CD that existed in the first car that I drove, that was the second car I drove. The first car that I drove that I learned to drive in that I drove through like my junior year of high school was a navy blue Honda Civic, I believe, from like 1992, 4, or 7. It could have been either of those years, but it had crank down windows and I fucking loved that car. I loved her to death and I actually still have very fond memories of her. And I listened to a bunch of burned CDs in there because I didn't have an aux cord. But anyway, that obviously got me thinking, these videos about some nights and just give me a reason, and then remembering the format and Nate Roos. That was kind of like the original Jack Antonoff like cinematic universe. Was like, he was in Fun and then he was in Bleachers, and like those were two bands that I really liked to listen to when I was in like high school. So Jack Antonoff was like a very large, or I guess not large, but like he was someone that I thought about a lot, like a decent amount in like high school before I knew that he was like producing for Taylor Swift and Lorde and Lana. And like, when did he do? I don't know. Anyway, but that's not the point. I want to talk about Nate Roos because Nate Roos, like, I feel like has such a good voice, like an interesting voice, like a very compelling performer, had really good songs in all of his projects, and kind of what happened to him. You know what I mean? Like, I need to do a peek in at Nate Roos because I just kind of wonder what he's up to. He's not in any bands right now. The Format 2001 through 2008 and Fun 2008 through 2015. I feel like he had a solo album, right? Okay, I'm on his Wikipedia page right now. Oh my God, he wrote and composed Die Young by Kesha, Stay the Night by Zedd and Hayley Williams. Oh my God. Two absolutely iconic songs from that time period. Like, yes, okay. Wait, I think that we need to have, genuinely from the bottom of my heart, like Taylor Swift needs to fire Jack Antonoff and get Nate Roos on the line, okay? Get them in the stew together and they'd be cooking. They'd be cooking up good, good shit. Okay, here's some tea that I didn't know. From 2009 to 2013, Nate Roos dated fashion designer Rachel Antonoff, sister of Fun guitarist Jack Antonoff. And I didn't know that they dated. Not surprising, but a fun fact. Rachel and Roos both provided backing vocals for the song Dakota from the 2007 album Trampoline by Jack's band Steel Train. Steel Train. I'm familiar with Steel Train. Yes, yes. Later, Rachel sang on some Fun songs and appeared in the video We Are Young. Rachel and Roos collaborated on the Ally Coalition, an activist project to raise awareness of LGBTQ issues. That's so nice. Roos began dating English fashion designer Charlotte Ronson in March 2014. Okay, so he clearly has a thing for fashion designers. That's interesting. Let me read about Charlotte Ronson. Oh, she literally is just a fashion designer. Pop-off queen, good for her. Doesn't seem to be a Nepo baby. Yeah, her parents aren't even listed, so go off, Charlotte Ronson. A real self-made queen. Good for you. But yeah, I don't know. Doesn't seem to be a lot going on with Nate Roos these days based on my light skim of the Google search. So let me just put it on the record that I would like to see a Nate Roos comeback in some capacity, right? Personally, I'm manifesting it as him producing Taylor's next album. I think that actually we could play a game called What Are Some Producers That Taylor Swift Should Work With Next Time That Are Not Jack Antonoff? I think this is a fun little thought experiment because, okay, not to talk tortured poets again, but like I'm going to keep it really short. Okay, this is all I'm going to say. Upon first listen, didn't really like it, but liked, well, you know, if you listened to the back half of last week's episode, you know my thoughts about it, or you knew what my thoughts were at that point in time. Didn't like it, but I did like the back half of the album better, the B-side tracks, the anthology tracks done by Aaron Dessner, because I am more of an Aaron Dessner girl. Like, I just love, like, his work on Folklore and Evermore, okay? So, like, I do kind of like that style, that he does her songs in. But as I've been like letting the Tortured Poets Department marinate a little bit more, I do need to say that like I am finding myself going back to way more of the regular tracks, the A-side tracks, than I thought I would. Like I'm really drawn to songs that I wasn't the first time I listened to it. Like I have maybe, I think I added all of the songs that I like and have been returning to their own playlist, like the abridged Tortured Poets Department, just for me, because there are a lot of songs on there that I have not even wanted to go back to since that first listen. And maybe I'll get there someday, and I really hope I do, but I do want to talk more. I have like a lot more to say about the Tortured Poets Department and like Taylor and stuff. So I might do like, I don't want to like subject people who don't fuck with that, like to that though. So I might do like a separate episode and just like upload it midweek talking about like some of the songs that have been growing on me, thoughts, parallels, etc. for the people who would like to partake. But yeah, I'm not going to do that now. What I am going to do though is talk about who would we maybe want to get on Taylor Swift's next project that is not Jack Antonoff, because I think she's got options. Like, I think that she can stick, like, one thing about her is that she loves to have, like, a dude produce her album, you know? Like, she loves to have, like, a guy, like a Jack Antonoff, an Aaron Dessner, like, she loves just to have a guy produce her album. So if we kind of want to stay in her comfort zone there, like, I actually do think Nate Ruess would fill those shoes rather well. Like, he has a proven history of writing a pop banger, so I think that would be a really safe choice. Ooh, the other person that I am just thinking of that I actually haven't thought of in years is Ryan Tedder. Y'all, what do y'all know about Ryan fucking Tedder, okay? You don't know shit about Ryan Tedder. I know shit about Ryan Tedder because I was a One Republic stan back in the day. Like, I fucking loved One Republic. I actually should go back and listen to some of their songs because I just loved them so much when I was in, like, middle school and high school that, like, I do think I owe myself a return to that as an adult to look through it with my current eyes. But he was also known to, like, he fronted One Republic, but he was also known to write a fucking pop banger. Like, he did Leona Lewis' Bleedin' Love. I keep bleeding, keep bleeding love. I keep bleeding, I keep bleeding love. Keep bleeding, keep bleeding low. He wrote a lot of fucking good songs. Who did he write for? He was nominated for a Record of the Year Grammy for Bleeding Love and Halo by Beyonce, the Beyonce. He was nominated for Album of the Year for I Am Sasha Fierce. He won an Album of the Year Grammy for Adele's 21. He won Album of the Year for 1989 in 2016. So he did work with Taylor, and he worked on 1989. And obviously 1989 is like considered one of the greatest pop albums like of the decade. So I actually really think we need to be calling up Ryan Tedder and getting him on TS12. Or I guess, I don't know, like, are we counting Tortured Poets, the anthology, as album 11 or albums 11 and 12? Because it doesn't feel right to call it 11 and 12. Like, it seems like it should just be considered one work. But people are calling it a double album, which, in my opinion, it's, like, not a double album. Like, it's just one extra long album. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know, like, if we're, like, is her next album going to be her 12th or her 13th? I don't know. Like, please let me know if you know. Okay, I took a break. I'm back. I thought I needed a snack, but then I, like, nothing that I kind of have available right now in my kitchen was resonating with me. So I was like, I'm going to sit on it for a little bit and, like, maybe see if something comes to mind that I am, like, you know, in the mood for. But I'm going to switch topics right now because I actually really need to talk about something. I need to talk about the amount of skinny propaganda that I have been seeing on TikTok and Instagram lately. It is, like, the full-blown, how I would imagine, like, the early 2000s again. Like, I have been seeing such blatant skinny, pro skinny content that I'm, like, aghast. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, like, we're still doing this. It is 2024. Like, I saw this video, I screenshotted it. I know I did. This Instagram reel the other day that made me so mad because it was this girl. Here it is. It's this from this girl who posted, like, a before and after, and the reel says, seeing your hard work pay off, greater than, greater than, greater than, greater than, losing 15 pounds just in time for summer, greater than emoji. So like, whatever. The first picture of her, like, she's very skinny. Like, she's very thin. Like, she is clearly tall and lean. You know what I mean? Like, very, like, obviously in very good shape. Like, her arms are very toned. And it's a video of her jump roping. Okay? So she's, like, I don't know if she's trying to, like, sell a jump rope. You know, like, I'm very suspicious of anyone posting about anything on Reels or TikTok. Especially in like the health and wellness space. I'm like, what are you trying to sell me? Like, what course are you trying to sell? And like, what word do you want me to DM you for more? You know, like, I just like am so suspicious of that. But so she's jump roping, which of course makes me think she's trying to sell a jump rope. I don't know if she is. Okay. That's just me spreading misinformation. But skinny girl jump roping. Okay. Then it cuts to the after clip and she has like this fucking carved out, like, fake looking prosthetic looking six pack. Like, it is weird. And the lighting is so funny because in the first, like, the before video she posts, she's in front facing light, you know, like, she is perfectly lit, front lit. And then in the after picture, she is lit, like, from, it looks like she took this video at like sunset, you know, like right kind of in that last like hour before the sun is setting. So the light is really low and you can like see the definition in her muscles really different. So it's like, it's just such a scam because it's like, yeah, like anyone who is lighting themselves like that looks more defined. Like even me, and like there is not a single part of my body that I would call defined or toned. Like I am really more of like a amorphous shape, body type, I would say. Not defined. Like I'm not, like I'm just not built like that. You know what I mean? But like, even in a light like that, like, yeah, like light's gonna hit me differently and I'm gonna just look more defined than if I'm completely front lit. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, misleading lighting, but also like, it's so crazy because she's just like, so in the first video, the before video, she was already skinny, but in the second, like after video, she is like even skinnier. And I'm like, oh my God, like we are full on back in like the heroin chic. Instead of doing heroin, the girls are jump roping now, which like, I can't do this. I can't do this. Like, I feel like for the past, like maybe like 10 years, honestly, almost like coming up on 10 years, like we've very much been in a cultural season of like, everybody is a beach body. Like you don't need to worry about getting your body in shape for summer. Like however you look in the summer, like that's how you look, and like it's totally fine, and like you don't need to like restrict yourself and like get this quote unquote bikini body. Like I feel like the conversation was shifting away from that for so long, but something has completely switched and I'm seeing so many people talking about it, like posting shamelessly about it on TikTok. Like I get so many videos, or I think I put like clicked not interested on so many of them that TikTok listened. It doesn't show me anymore. But girls posting like, here's what I'm eating in a calorie deficit to get skinny for summer. And like, that is the verbiage they were using, because I do feel like people were still trying to be skinny this whole time. You know what I mean? But it was a language shift. Like people would be like trying to be healthy, you know, like thinness was kind of veiled under this pursuit of health, right? Like we know that. But like now people are just like saying the quiet part loud, and they're just saying like, here's how I'm trying to get skinny for summer, in a way that was like shocking for me to see. I'm like, oh, like we're still doing this? Like we're still posting online like how little we're eating every day in order to quote get skinny for summer? Like ladies, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep doing this. But yeah, I am curious to see like if this is like an algorithm thing. Like I would be curious to see if anyone else has noticed this year, particularly like a very strong shift back to like focusing on skinniness in a way that I like actually probably haven't really seen since Tumblr, when like anorexia Tumblr blogs like were a thing. Remember that? That was crazy. Wait, I have to. There was like a Teen Vogue article about it that I remember reading when I was like
13 or 14.
This is from Teen Vogue from December 18th, 2013, by Sarah Delvin. She says, spend time searching for thinspiration on social media and you'll start to feel like you're being watched. Typing in hashtag thinspo on Tumblr brings up an automated message with information on counseling services all over the world, along with a flood of pro-anorexia or pro-Anna images. Pinterest recommends you contact the National Eating Disorders Association helpline. If you search for hashtag thinspiration on Instagram on your phone, no results come up. The hashtag's been wiped clean from the mobile app. But search for the same term on a web browser, well, then you'll see a host of collarbones, ribs, flat stomachs, and strangely, a sponsored post for Petco. The challenge for social media companies and unsuspecting users alike is that it's hard to know if a picture of a slender girl in workout gear is just a photo or a call to action. Images with text are easier to understand. Quote, gain control, lose weight, lose control, gain weight, next to a girl doing a yoga pose. What you eat in private, you wear in public, next to an illustration of a girl in a swimsuit. But for every image with the superimposed text, quote, thin, 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 be thin, very thin, now stay thin, there's a more ambiguous black and white photo of a girl in a bikini with the focus on her skinny legs. Stumbling upon these photos without really understanding what they are is commonplace, as 17-year-old avid Tumblr user Kelsey discovered. If you reach out beyond your own blog, quote, if you reach out beyond your own blog enough, you'll probably run into a thinspo or pro Anna Tumblr at some point, she says. The endless artsy shots of thin girls can be hypnotizing. Seeing all those pictures of emaciated bodies is hard, but at the same time, it's intriguing, end quote. And yeah, like, that's kind of what... This was a real thing on Tumblr specifically back in the day. Like, yeah, like 2013, 2014, I would say, was kind of the heyday of this before I think they started cracking down on it a little bit. Or did they? Yeah, Tumblr, you can't have anything on Tumblr anymore. You can't have porn on Tumblr. You can't have anything on there anymore. But I'm noticing a shift back to this on TikTok. And I mean, the algorithm is unlike any other social media app we've seen before. So like, I am curious, like that does scare me. Like I have like, you know, I'm 26, like I have an okay relationship with my body, but like, I'm nervous that like, I mean, I can tell that the girls running these accounts are like very young. These like getting skinny accounts, like calorie deficit accounts, like are obviously very young. And so that to me tells me that these videos are getting pushed out to young girls, like girls in high school who are like, have squishy brains and, you know, are very impressionable and like, are already probably having a hard time with their body image. Like, it scares me that this is kind of like coming back into vogue on TikTok. Yeah, I kind of like don't have any thoughts about it, obviously, other than like it's bad and I don't like it. So kind of end of story, I guess. Oh my God, I remember what I was gonna talk about. The other night I remembered randomly the movie The Fault in Our Stars, and I realized that it came out in 2014, so it's been exactly 10 years, almost, like, I think it came out in, like, May or June of 2014, because I remember, like, it was rare, I was there, I remember it all too well, and it's, like, kind of almost exactly 10 years to the month. So I rewatched it because I obviously was 16 years old and I was a Tumblr user and I did consume both the book and film version of The Fault in Our Stars. So I needed to watch it from my 10 years later perspective, right? Kind of see if it held up in my eyes. And I was texting Montana. the other night. I was like, I'm rewatching The Fault in Our Stars to see if it holds up 10 years later. And she replies, bitch, it didn't even hold up 10 years ago. And I'm like, okay, right. But like by hold up, I mean like, will I still enjoy it? Because those are two different things. Like when I was 16, like I really liked the movie and I thought it was like, and I liked the book and I thought it was like, you know, I thought that some infinities are bigger than other infinities was like the deepest thing I'd ever heard. So I would like... I just wanted to know, like, would I still enjoy it 10 years down the road? And I did have a very enjoyable viewing experience because this, like, is really a time capsule movie in the sense that, like, while I was watching it, I kept thinking of, like, other things that were happening in 2014. Like, I got thinking about, like, YouTube, like, early YouTube and, like, Cute Polish. Do y'all remember Cute Polish? I made a TikTok about Cute Polish the other day. It's the... like, you wouldn't last an hour in the asylum where they raised me meme format, and like the asylum being cute polished nail art videos. Those had like a fucking chokehold on me harder than anything you could ever imagine. But yeah, I was just like jolted back into 2014 when I was watching this movie. And I do remember that this was before the movie came out, I think. I think this was after I'd read the book, which I don't remember when the book kind of got popular, but I was younger when I read that book. I think I was maybe 14, Fault in Our Stars novel. 2012. So yeah, I probably read The Fault in Our Stars like 2012 then, because I would have been about 14. Yeah, that checks out. But I, at one point, in my like photography, Instagram photographer era when I was like 14, I one time took a picture with my DSLR camera that I had, obviously, because I, you know, like I wasn't gonna be caught with like taking iPhone pictures in 2014, okay? Like, yes, I did spend $600 on a DSLR camera, okay? It was a Canon event, okay? I couldn't have interfered, but I took a picture of a box, a Marlboro box that was kind of laying in the side of the road. And I captioned it, whatever that fucking quote of like, you put the killing thing in your mouth, but you don't give it the power to kill you. Like, I put that as the caption to the picture. So I do feel like I have a stake in this, okay? Like, I did at one point care a lot about The Fault in Our Stars, and I did look back with fondness when I was kind of jolted back into that 2012 through 2014 time period, which is crazy for me. Like, there's nothing crazier than being a 14 to 16 year old girl, and I stand by that. I pulled up my notes that I took during the movie. I did not remember that Mike Birbiglia was in this movie, and I think it's because I like didn't know who he was until like probably 2019 when my friends showed me one of his stand-up specials. And I actually, Mike Birbiglia is one of the comedians that kind of like softened me to the idea of comedians. Like, I still kind of am, but I used to have this like, I just like hated stand-up, and I hated men doing stand-up particularly. Like, I just was like, there is like no man that's actually just like funny enough to be talking on stage for that long. No one used to do that. Like, I just kind of didn't really, it's not my preferred art form, you know what I mean, to consume. But some friends that I used to work with, one time we were hanging out and we put on one of his, I think it was a Netflix special, and I found it very compelling, very engaging. Like, I loved the way he kind of like wove the story together and brought it, wrapped it up in like a nice little bow at the end. Like, I thought his storytelling abilities were impeccable. I thought he was really, really funny. So yeah, I have like a soft spot in my heart for Mike Birbiglia. I obviously loved his performance in the Taylor Swift Antihero music video. You know who else was in the Taylor Swift Antihero music video? John Early from Stress Positions earlier. It all comes full circle, okay? That's the fucking invisible string, baby. But yeah, Mike Birbiglia is like the cancer support group survivor who had ball cancer. And I love a ball cancer cameo. Like, you know, ball cancer dad in White Lotus, a classic, if you ask me. Okay, this then got me thinking, and I'm gonna do a whole episode about this, and I think I'm gonna invite Avery on. I haven't asked her yet, so if she's listening, this is probably the first she's hearing of this, but Avery, I would love to have you on to talk about the books about like death and dying that we loved as children, because I did, like, me and Avery too, I don't want to speak for her, but for me, like, I like freaking loved books about like sad books about like dying and death and tragedy and horror. One of the earliest instances I remember, like one of the times I was the youngest, the book that I read that stood out the most to me, like my first death book, if you will, my first big death book, was the book Mick Hart Was Here. And this was a classic in the Stober household. Like, me and Avery both fucked with this book so hard. Mick Hart Was Here by Barbara Park of Junie B. Jones fame. This terribly sad book about this girl whose brother dies getting hit by a car riding his bike, and like, you know, the fallout afterwards, and like her family grieving. And I like don't know why, like I like really just like ate up this book. I don't know, like I've never really had like a death in the family, like knock on wood, like literally I'm kind of superstitious about like saying stuff like that, but I think it's because I like just didn't know like what the deal was, and so I was just like fascinated by it, because like I didn't, like it was so unfamiliar to me, like the idea of death as a child, you know. The other one that I wrote down here was the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. There's a million of these Chicken Soup for the Soul books. If you haven't heard of them, first of all, grow up. Second of all, they're like these collections of essays that like are all kind of themed. So they have a lot of them. There's like Chicken Soup for the Dog Lover's Soul, and they're all like heartwarming stories about dogs, or Chicken Soup for the Mom's Soul, and it's like all heartwarming stories about being a mom. You know, you get the gist. There was Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul, Chicken Soup for the Tween Soul, Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul 2, 3, and 4. And Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul. And like, I obviously was reading all of these when I was like 10. Like, I was like 9, 10 years old, probably even younger, like reading books that were definitely meant for teenagers, because I was like, not to flex, but I was like constantly reading. Like, from the time it was like second grade, I was reading at like a fucking 12th grade level, because I just be that way. Okay. I don't know what to say. Not anymore. You can barely force me to read now, but at one point I was a voracious reader. But I remember going to the public library and checking out these Chicken Soup books and skipping straight to the death and dying section, because there was like different chapters with like different themed essays in them. And I would literally read all of the stories in the death and dying section and then close the book, return it to the library, rinse and repeat, okay? I only cared to get the hard-hitting stories about death and tragedy. I had my priorities straight. But yeah, obviously the common thread here is that The Fault in Our Stars is like a cancer death movie, so it kind of fell right in line. The movie that I seem like I would like, because it falls into this category, but I actually don't like it all, is A Walk to Remember. For some reason, that movie is just like too sad, and I don't like it, and it makes me sad. Like, I have like a real soft spot for Mandy Moore, and like, I just hate the idea of Mandy Moore like being sick and unwell, you know? Like, it just kind of doesn't sit right with my spirit, so I just am not really a big Walk to Remember stan. But yeah, I was obsessed with stories of death and dying from a very, very young age. And yeah, it makes sense that I was a Fault in Our Stars kid then, right? Makes sense. Next up on my notes is, I love Laura Dern. So true. I do love Laura Dern. Laura Dern, thank you. The soundtrack absolutely fucks. Yes, I do. I think The Fault in Our Stars had kind of been like in my mind for some reason, because I was thinking about The Fault in Our Stars soundtrack, and I think I was talking about it with Ty, but there was bangers on that soundtrack. Like, The Fault in Our Stars was doing it. They had like M83, Kaleo, Charlie XCX, boom, clap the sound of my heart, the beat goes on and on and on and on. Like, no one was doing it like The Fault in Our Stars soundtrack. Let me pull this up, because I owned this on CD. I had it in my car, famously, the car that I described earlier with the crank windows. Fault in Our Stars soundtrack. Thank you. Ed Sheeran, yeah. Oh my god, the song Simple as This by Jake Bugg. I loved that song so much when I heard that song. Let Me In by Group Love. Let me in, yeah, let me in closer. Up in the down like I'm about to down the coaster. Absolute banger. The Birdie of It All, T-shirt by Birdie, Long Way Down, Tom Odell. Oh my god, Tom Odell had a real moment. While I'm Alive by Starfucker, Without Words, Ray LaMontagne. Like, sorry guys, like, this absolutely slaps. No One Ever Loved by Licky Lee. Licky Lee of There's a Possibility fame. Not About Angels by Birdie. Oh my god, you guys, similar to Nate Roos. What happened to Birdie? Birdie was like, the Tumblr girls fucked with Birdie. She's probably still doing music. Oh yeah, she's making music, doing stuff. I just don't know about it. So yeah, but like, damn, she was really, really popular for a couple years. Like, The Skinny Love of It All. Oh my god. The other people who were like really having a moment around this time was Shailene Woodley and Ansa Elgort. Because they were lovers in The Fault in Their Stars. They were sister and brother in Divergent. Okay, I should do a Divergent rewatch. I would honestly love to rewatch these movies with Avery, because we both lived through these in real time and watched them. Oh man, it says, Oh, it seems like you can't really watch it anywhere. Oh, you can watch it on Max. Okay, I got Max. Because those movies were bad. Those movies were bad. But I read the books too. Like, I'm telling you guys, like, I used to be a real bookworm. I used to be a real bookish girl. Hot girls read. I ended up talking about Tumblr more than I thought in this episode. So thanks for going on that kind of stroll journey with me. What have you? I'm like gonna be so honest. I'm getting a little tired of talking. Like, I feel like I just need to stop. I'm gonna land this plane. We're gonna touch down and unbuckle our seatbelts. You know, what we're gonna do though is remain seated until it's our turn. And then we're gonna stand up. We're gonna get our luggage from the overhead bin and we're gonna go, right? But we're not gonna stand up. We're not gonna rush ahead of our turn. Like, it's gonna be a really kind of orderly deplaning process. And it's gonna be really calm. I would love it if you gave me a follow over on Obscura Pod on Instagram. I have been trying to post more episode visuals. I will be posting the Iron Claw Entertainment Weekly photo shoot, whatever, on there. So go check out for yourself, along with anything else that I deem fit. But we also do have fun on the stories over there. So get into it. Go follow Obscura Pod if you want to keep up with me. I'm Olivia Stober Studios on Instagram and on TikTok. And I would freaking love it and be forever indebted to you if you gave me a rating and a review for the podcast, because there's been more listeners lately. Like, I think we're almost at 40 Spotify followers, which, like, slay. The big 4-0, am I right, ladies? But yeah, if you are a Spotify listener, if you could give me a 5-star rating, I would actually give you the biggest kiss on the lips. Just like that. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, or if you have access to Apple Podcasts, I would love it if you wanted to leave me a little review. Just, you know, tell me your thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, or just give me a little compliment. You know, I love that too. But I will see you here next week, same time, same place. This is Olivia Obscura Nation signing off, and I will talk to you next week. Okay. Bye.